Hi, this is Daniel Jalkut.
And this is Manton Reese.
And this is Core Intuition, people arriving, slamming doors. This show is sponsored by Linode. Well, Manton, as far as I know, you are back in Austin, Texas. And that makes two of us who are recording from home. Everything is perfect. Everything's comfortable. Everything's easy now. We just sit back, relax in the quiet comfort of our home offices.
Yeah, not exactly for me today. I am back in Austin, and you know, I talked about kind of road trip mishaps and unexpected detours last week. Made it back, and the car was running great. Actually, it was running really smooth on the last couple legs of the trip. It was a great trip. Did make it back, and I am not at my home office right now. I'm actually recording from my co-working place, and lots of noise in the background, people arriving, slamming doors nearby in the hallway. So we'll see how it goes. But we decided that after being on the road for a week and a half or so, that instead of relaxing at home, we would remodel the kitchen this week. So there's not a perfect place to record.
I want you to just get up and say, "Can everybody quiet the hell down? Get off my lawn."
Yeah, it's all right.
Yeah, it's fine. So folks, forgive us if there's a few background noises. We're not going to make Manton jump through hoops to apply like the Logic door slam filter on this episode. But are you, let's see, it's Wednesday as we're recording this. Are you having a productive week so far? How's it going? Getting back? Is it trouble getting back in the groove on top of all the kitchen remodeling? You have that sort of like traveling inertia, maybe?
A little. I mean, I haven't had too much trouble getting back in the groove in terms of work, just because there's so much I need to do. So I there's really no excuse to put it off or to slowly get back into work. I kind of, the last couple days of the trip, especially we had like one day before driving back, had a long last day of driving. And before that, we kind of took a day off when we were recording last week. And I kind of slowly got back more into email, catching up on, you know, bug reports and fixes and just keeping up with things. So I kind of slowly got back into it the last few days of the trip. And I thought I'd hit the ground running pretty well beginning this week. And started work early on Monday morning, got a lot done. But yeah, we've got all this other stuff going on with the kids and with new countertops and appliances and all this other stuff. And there's only so many hours uninterrupted I can work in a row. But it's all good. Actually getting some stuff done. It's been good. Like when I'm on the road, I don't mind working and don't, you know, try to keep up with things. But there are some things that are not good to do from the road. Like I didn't feel comfortable submitting a new iOS build to Apple, for example, just in case it went to the App Store and there was an issue and I was driving for hours and couldn't get to it. I didn't feel comfortable deploying major server changes, same reason. So it's good to get back and to do those things that have been kind of backing up and they're ready to go.
Well, Manton, I don't have any excuses for not being on my focus game. I am here in my home office. It's quiet. I have no slamming doors. I have no kitchen being remodeled, although that is eventually looming on the horizon. But I've just been trying to, you know, chip away at my Mars Edit stuff. It's really been one of those kind of horrible slash fun weeks where, if I look at the calendar now, it's been over a week since effectively I started working on one bug for Mars Edit 4 that I thought was going to be like a 1 hour fix. And then it turned out to be one of those like opening up Pandora's box situations where, oh, to fix this one bug, I actually need to change the whole way I'm doing something. And then that opens up, that creates other bugs. And thank goodness for my limited but useful unit testing suite, because I changed like one modest thing about the rich text editor in Mars Edit. And suddenly all this stuff cropped up and I noticed things that were broken, things that had been regressions from Mars Edit 3. And, you know, these are things that it's a little bit tricky to decide how much effort to put into them because in my fairly limited, you know, although public beta, I haven't gotten a lot of complaints about it, but I look at some of this stuff and I'm like, oh, this is totally not working the way the app is supposed to work. I need to redo this, redo something, maybe spend a day figuring something out. And then the next day, I think I'm all done and I commit it and I'm like, phew, that's good. And then as I'm using the app, and this is tricky too, because I don't typically use rich text mode in Mars Edit. I'm using the app in rich text mode, trying to see how things work. And oh no, that's really wrong. That's messed up. Go back to like basics in a way. I mean, I've been spending the last week or more mostly working in this weird kind of like borderlands part of my code where I'm working in JavaScript and in Objective-C. And sometimes when I'm working on this stuff, I just think, why did I ever add rich text mode? This app in particular has this weird challenge, which is the app probably wouldn't be as successful as it is without rich text mode, which for those who aren't familiar is basically just a WYSIWYG mode for writing HTML for your blog. When Mars Edit was first created, it had just a HTML source mode, and everything you wrote was either HTML or plain text, and maybe a text filter added paragraph tags for you. The vast majority of average users expect to be able to type in rich text and have it look like Word or Pages or Text Edit or Mail for that matter. And so I added that feature, I think, as part of Mars Edit 2. And since then, I've often wondered whether that was a mistake, whether like Mars Edit should have been hunkered down on being like a nerd's nerd tool. Mm-hmm. I love the fact that there are so many gratified users of Mars Edit out there who do appreciate the rich text editor. And in fact, some of my nerdiest friends, people you and I know, Manton, use the app in rich text mode, even though they could easily use it in plain text with Markdown or whatever.
Yeah.
But geez, sometimes every once in a while I get this like payback time of a week when I'm like supposed to be finishing up the finishing touches on my app. And instead I'm like digging through gross JavaScript code. And like, I'm like a weird expert of this JavaScript rich editing framework that I use. And sometimes I'm like, how can I, you know, how can I make this mastery of this domain into something more valuable than just giving my users like the baseline of what they expect as blog editors? So yeah. I don't know. That's my venting frustration for the last week. Is I've been having fun doing it because it's one of those things where, oh, I never use JavaScript. This is fun. I don't know that much about, you know, in the big scheme of things, I don't know that much about DOM editing and HTML technologies. I know more than a lot of people, but it's always an educational experience, but it's also always a frustrating experience.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's this parallel kind of between our work now, and I don't have a rich text editor exactly, but I have Markdown support in micro.blog, and on the web I use a JavaScript editor that does syntax highlighting for Markdown, and I'll be introducing, you know, similar stuff in the iOS app. And so, and also in the iOS app, it's kind of a hybrid. I have a lot of HTML and JavaScript as well as native Objective-C. And so I've standardized kind of on Markdown, and that'll evolve, and there'll never be rich text exactly, but I think there will be more, yeah, what people are used to in apps like Ulysses, Editorial, you know, some of these new, like, next generation kind of Markdown editors where it's Markdown, but they do syntax highlighting. Sometimes they hide links. Sometimes they go a little beyond just plain text Markdown. And I think that's the path that I will probably take for my stuff. Yeah. I'm curious with the rich text though, do you have any stats? Like you said, you know, some nerds who still use rich text just because they like it and it's simpler, but do you know 70% of my users use rich text? Do you have any like insight?
That would be smart, Manton, if I did. I'm actually saying this as I type a OmniFocus reminder to myself, add rich/plain text usage to stats.
Yeah.
Because I do, since for 10 years now, I've collected stats and mostly not used them except to sort of reinforce my assumption that WordPress is the most popular system among my users. So I have, I do in my Sparkle updater system, I send back information, anonymous information about what, you know, technologies people are using. So I say, you know, if they're using WordPress, all the different types of blog systems they're using. And it would be really smart for me to put whether they're using, whether they're defaulting, because the thing is in Mars that you can switch back and forth at will, but whether you're defaulting to rich text or to plain text is a good question.
Right. Well, what is the default if you don't do anything in Mars Edit?
It's a contentious enough thing in my mind that there is no default. It actually forces you to choose on the first.
Oh, interesting.
The first time you edit.
Okay. Well, that's actually good in a way because it means that your stats, when you collect them, will be pretty accurate for what people want. Like you're not pushing them in a certain direction.
That's true. That's right. The downside of that is many people don't understand the nuance of that choice when they're forced to make it. So
it is pushing a little. I'm surprised you don't default to just one thing, but that is interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. If I had to choose, it would be the best thing would definitely be to default to rich text.
Yeah.
But there's such a legacy of plain text users of the app. And I think a lot of people who are referred to the app are referred to it by people who appreciate the plain text mode. So there's just this risk in an app like that where you're like, I don't want people to open this up and think it's something that it isn't, you know? And if you get an app where you're like, oh, this is cool. I've heard this is a really good HTML/markdown plain text source editor for blog pages. And I'm so frustrated with the way that, you know, the web interface is always trying to push me into rich text. And then you download my app and you run it and it's like, oh, this is just rich text too. So I don't know. It's kind of it's one of those things where possibly against my better judgment, the app is completely bifurcated mode wise, right? Like you're either in rich text mode or you're in plain text mode.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay for an app like this, but it is a challenge. It's a design challenge.
Well, it's a complexity in the design, but also just. You're supporting, kind of like two completely independent parts of the app, and a bug in one might not affect a bug in another. And I mean, I've standardized this for text editing, this kind of middle ground that's, you know, eventually, and right now it's mostly plain text, but eventually I feel like it will be more in the middle of plain text and rich text where it's like rich markdown, kind of like it's markdown, but you get a little help with the markdown. But I do have this kind of split in other things. For example, posting, I have very similar split as you do in Mars Edit, where like on the iPhone app, I can post to a micro.blog hosted blog. I can post to WordPress, and like those are completely separate code paths. It's might as well be two apps in terms of that part of the code, and it adds complexity. And every time I have to touch something like that, I don't regret it. It's good that it supports those things, but there's just more to debug. There's more potential problems. And if you're not using both of those code paths all the time, you can miss things.
Yeah, I sort of take, as far as the duality, the two-modedness of Mars Edit, I sort of take some reassurance from apps like, you know, even Apple's own apps like TextEdit and Mail have this two-mode system for plain text versus rich text. So I kind of feel like even if a company like Apple, with its emphasis on simplicity and sort of opinionated defaults, even they can't, you know, force one on their users, then I think it's pretty justified to have this distinction. But it is something, like I said, after these weeks sometimes of like unexpected debugging, you know, the other thing I feel after debugging something like this is, whoa, should I really be using an open source framework for this? I've gained so much by doing so. But when you get down to it, sometimes it's like, oh, this thing is, you know, I'm using this open source framework that's designed to run primarily on web browsers. And on any web browser that exists. So it has all this special case behavior for Internet Explorer, for Opera, for Mozilla, and for WebKit for that matter. But sometimes I'm like, am I like taking on an elephant's worth of source code for a mouse's worth of, you know, behavior?
Right.
But anyway, it's all coming together. I think I'm at a point now where I can wrap up this rich editor work and the app will be better for it. And, you know, for the time being and probably forever for that matter, the rich text mode is actually a major marketable point for the app. There's an argument to be made that the work I did in the past week is the best work I've done in weeks because this is, like you suggested, I should probably justify that with actually getting real stats. But I do think the more that Mars Edit can appeal to average users who use the app and expect it to behave like any old word processor, right, that's a good investment.
Well, that's a... I mean, to hear you say it like that, you should default to rich text if that's how you feel about introducing new users to the app. And again, stats would be good, and that would tell you. I mean, that feels like something even you might want to sneak into this release is like some basic stats. Because if it's 50-50, then maybe what you're doing is fine. But if it really is like 70-80% on rich text, then maybe defaulting is the way to go.
Yeah, you might be right. It's one of those things that it sort of comes with the friction of having a user base that was historically fine with the plain text, if not passionate about it. And then myself, I use the plain text exclusively. Right. So it's like one of these tricky things where it's like, what happens? This is a higher level question. What happens when the app you are developing largely for with yourself in mind, when the mainstream audience for that app uses it in a different mode? That's kind of a conundrum, you know?
Yeah.
All right. This week, we are happy to have back sponsoring the show, Linode. If you need a Linux box to host a website, a private Git repository, or to serve as the back end for your latest iOS app, consider Linode Cloud Hosting. Linode has been doing infrastructure as a service since 2003. They give their customers free upgrades, and they have global data centers equipped with industry-leading data center-grade SSDs. Now, you might have a hosting service now. You might think, I'm happy with my hosting service, but maybe you just don't know what it's really like to be happy with your hosting service. Here are some things about Linode that might be different from what you have now. With Linode, you get full root access, so you have full control of your VMs, your containers, everything. They also give you clear, precise hourly billing, and you can set a monthly pricing cap. You just pay for what you use. They have add-ons for load balancing, system metrics, and backups. And all of this great stuff comes with their 24/7, 365 days a year customer support. Now, if you're a listener to the show, which you must be, or you're really finding a sneaky way to listen to just this promo, you can use this promo code, though. It's CoreInt2017. That's CoreInt2017. That's a $20 promo code. And if you think about it from the point of view of their plans, starting at as low as $5 a month, that's effectively a way to get 4 months worth of Linode hosting for free. Try it out. See how it works for you. Go to linode.com/coreint to learn more. Thanks to Linode for sponsoring the show.
Yeah, I'm a longtime Linode customer now. Really happy with them. When I was on this trip on the road, you know what I didn't worry about? I didn't really worry about my servers. For the most part, everything was really smooth. Checked in every once in a while. No problem. So super happy with Linode. And, you know, they're rolling out improvements all the time. They have a major actual redesign of their dashboard, a control panel for managing Linode instances and, you know, DNS and stats and everything that you might have them handle for you. And if you're a Linode customer already, or if you start with the coupon code now, you can check it out. There'll be a little banner at the top for beta access to the new control panel if you want to check it out. So always making improvements, and really happy with Linode for their great product and their longtime support of the show. You can learn more at linode.com/coreint. So Daniel, as you mentioned, I'm recording from the co-working place today, and it might sound like I'm in the middle of the floor with people talking and slamming doors all around me. I'm actually in a private conference room with the door that closes, and I thought it was off in the corner where it was going to be quiet, but you know, we're recording when people are kind of coming into work for the day in the morning, and so it is extremely loud. But I bring this up to say there's a lot of people around here, a lot of small companies, from one person to 20 people, some larger companies maybe that have larger offices in this building, but a lot of people doing client work, freelance work. And of course, we have a lot of people who listen to the show that also do that kind of work. And it was suggested to us, Scotty, longtime friend of the show, and he's in the Slack channel, said, hey, let's try to have a freelance channel on Slack for these folks. People that they do independent work, they have indie products, but they also do work, consulting, contract work, and they have special things that they're running into, things like invoicing and billing. And so we have a new Slack channel, Freelance. And if you haven't seen it and you're in the Slack, go check it out. And there's discussion just starting there this week.
Yeah, I thought that this is appropriate for us because, you know, sometimes Mant and I try to think about what the heck is our show even about. And I think a nut of our show is trying to, you know, there's something about our show that's trying to succeed kind of like outside the normal boundaries of whatever, you know, normal boundaries are. So it's like you and I started talking on the show almost 10 years ago. We have been talking about how to go indie, how to make our own software products. But, you know, in the mix of that, there's also been lots of times when you've been talking about, you know, your consulting work. You did consulting work on the side for a long time. There's a lot of business related stuff, a lot of like work habits related stuff. I guess the cohesive thing that brings it all together for me is it's all about trying, you know, this is not a technical podcast. We've discovered that many times as we don't really talk about technical stuff, even though we occasionally hint at it. We come back to usually workflow things, attitude things, personality things, emotional things. And I think freelance is just ripe with discussion topics for all of that. And I was kind of happy to see Scotty suggest the freelance channel because freelance is like this lingering, it's like this lingering ghost in the, you know, speaking of my home office, there's this little ghost in the corner, Mr. Freelance, who is always saying like, you are poor, you don't have enough money, you are not selling enough copies of Mars Edit, you are not expanding your experience enough, you are not socializing with other people, you know, broadening your social circles work-wise. And often I feel like maybe I should do freelance work again, even though if I think back to years ago when I stopped doing freelance, it was like a great transition for me to be able to put all my time into my indie software. But I'm glad to have that there. I'm going to keep my eyes on it because I do occasionally still sort of fantasize about doing something else. And, you know, I think especially being out of freelance for so long, I mostly only have the positive memories. But I guess on the other hand, maybe this channel will remind me of all the negative memories as well.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to what people say in the channel. And I'm still doing freelance as well. I mean, I'd love to work 100% of my time on micro.blog, but I have other products from Riverfold Software and I have clients. I'm still working on a couple things at the moment that I probably should have wrapped up by now, but that it's still nice at the moment while I'm transitioning, kind of making this change to work everything on micro.blog and making this transition from, you know, the Kickstarter backing that was now 7, you know, months ago to recurring revenue and customers. It's still nice to have a little bit of that income coming in through consulting work because it's not that it's more predictable exactly, but at least actually it is in a way. Like if you're doing a project and you know you're going to be able to invoice for a certain amount, you can kind of count on that happening, even if you're a little behind schedule or even if something comes up or the scope changes or, you know, all the problems that can happen with this kind of work. It is nice to know that at the end of the day, I can send an invoice and everyone I've ever worked with has paid and been great clients. And so I know I'm going to get that check at some point in the mail to supplement income. So yeah, I'm still doing some of that. And you know, it's, I don't think I'm good at it. I think that's one thing I've discovered over the last couple of years. I don't think I'm cut out to do full-time freelance work. I try to deliver a good product for my clients. It's not that part that I'm not good at, but it's just all the, just keeping up with everything and staying on top of invoices and just balancing all the work. I don't think that that's for me, but it's as a part, as like a one part of the puzzle. It's super helpful and it's an important part for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think the predictability is really something. And it's the same type of thing that leads me to sometimes also fantasize about a regular full-time job. You know, like, oh my gosh, if I had a check coming in, you know, we work in an industry where if you have a full-time job, you can get a pretty nice check coming every 2 weeks or whatever it is. And I guess one of the many things I love, of course, still about indie, quote-unquote indie work, which I define as sort of being, you know, the buck stops here for everything. Like, I make the software, I have to sell the software, I have to market the software. But the nice thing, this is why I always remind myself, even though it hasn't come through as reality as often as I'd like, but you know, you're guaranteed. Let's say you have a job and you're getting $2,000 a month for it. Just make that a baseline number. You're guaranteed to get that $1,000 paycheck every 2 weeks. And I just always remind myself, you're not guaranteed of that $1,000 paycheck as an indie, but you are open to the possibility that it might be a $10,000 paycheck when you least expect it.
Yeah.
You know, like with the freelance and with the indie work, of course, it's so nice to have that reassurance of the check coming in, but you're also assured the check is never going to be 10 times larger than you thought it was going to be.
Right. Yeah, it's true. And there's certainly pros and cons for all these different types of work. And we're lucky that we're in an industry, I think, where there's choice. It's not just one way to go to work and do your job. There's all these different ways. And of course the podcasts and that kind of work, and you know, bloggers who have that as part of their income too. But yeah, the trade-off is with the indie work is sometimes you gotta plan a little better for those days where the money is not coming in.
Yeah, I think there really is something too, if you can make it work, and that's why I think I'm a little bit drawn back to the idea of doing some freelance work, is there's something to the idea of doing a little bit of freelance work so you get a little bit of guaranteed paycheck.
It's like diversifying, right? I mean,
yeah,
you get a little bit of the steady income, and
right,
then you have still can hopefully have those big spikes. But if something goes wrong, you do your next Marzetta release. And, you know, we talked a few weeks ago about your expectations for, you know, 2X, 3X, whatever daily sales that you're hoping. If something goes wrong and that doesn't happen, you're not stuck. You're not scrambling,
right,
like you're telling your wife, oh, I got to go get a regular job like tomorrow. Like, you still have some of that other steady income that's coming in to supplement.
Of course, the trick, as you and I both know, is finding a way to put enough effort into either when you're trying to split it that way. And I remember when I went full-time with Mars Edit, it was like this revelation. Oh my gosh, I have every day open all day. I don't have to work on anything else. And I think if I added freelance work in, it could be a bit tricky. But on the other hand, you know, like this podcast is kind of like freelance work. I am juggling things already. I guess the question is, how much can your full-time indie pursuits, how much can you mess with that schedule and still,
yeah,
you know, still come through with the software releases that you want to make as an indie? But I don't know. I'm going to keep my eyes open, ears open, and maybe I'll find the perfect sort of like not too daunting freelance work to give myself a little taste of it again. And maybe that channel in the Slack will help me orient myself to it. So I'll be prepared to do that. So folks, if you've been listening and wishing there was more of a specific place to talk about freelance, you now have a supremely great excuse to join the Core Intuition Slack team, because we're going to get this conversation heated up over there.
All right, Daniel. Well, I promise next week I'll record from a quieter space. I really thought this would work out. I've worked, you know, work here a couple, a few times a week. At least I did before my trip, when everything got upset. And I've done this a couple times where I've like reserved a conference room just to have some like completely separate space, because I don't have a private office, not willing to pay as much as a private office is. So I'm in the kind of the shared space usually. And I've done this before, had like a reserve a conference room and like for a big like conference call, or, you know, Skype with a client, or, you know, something, you know, I don't know, something like that. That type of setup seems to work, but super loud today. So, lesson learned.
Makes me think that, especially with the popularity of podcasts, it seems like a modern co-working environment should have a recording studio. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely,
it should be like at Apple did at WWDC. You know, maybe not as fancy as Apple can do, but hey, how about like a semi noise proof? Mm-hmm. Room. And the thing is, it can be like closet sized, right? It doesn't need to be much, but give people a semi noise proof room, let them reserve it for 2 hours at a time. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's something you should bring up with them.
Oh, they should definitely do something like that. And I think there's no reason why it couldn't be as fancy as what Apple did. I mean, this WeWork, I've mentioned before, I mean, I think they have plenty of money and they've got offices all over the world. They could easily do a nice little podcast or a recording studio. And it wouldn't just be for podcast people that wanted to do video or audio for screencasts and things like that. I think people would use it. They do have these like little telephone booth size rooms for calls. But the idea with those is really you go in for, you know, 30 minutes or less. You make a call. It's small. There's like a little mini kind of place you can put your laptop, and it's soundproof-ish. But the idea with those is quick calls, you know, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, not hours, because other people might want to jump in and have a call. And right. So you just jump in and jump out. You don't reserve it for hours at a time. So that I don't think is a good fit for a podcast necessarily. And then a conference room is not a great fit either, not as soundproof. So yeah, there's a middle ground there I think would be really useful for people. And I don't know, maybe even get more people to get out of their house and use spaces like this.
Yeah, I think it would be a good selling point. So, Manton, maybe that's your new business. You just need to start the wepodcast.com.
No.
All right. Well, Manton, I'm going to let you get back to your co-working, and I am going to get back to my homeworking, and we're going to make some great stuff. And folks, as we mentioned, join us in the Slack. It's chat.coreint.org. We also can be reached at feedback@coreint.org or via Twitter @coreint. So don't be a stranger, and we'll talk to you all next week.
See ya.